have been asked many times as how I have to get started in the research of flying saucers as they were known in the earlier days, and now they are known as unidentified objects. Well, being a student and a teacher of natural law, also known as universal law, besides interested in astronomy, when the flying saucers came in on the scene in 47, naturally, I became quite interested, since I have always been believing that we were not the only ones in this universe, since astronomy itself teaches that there are many, many planets out there, and we ourselves were planning or figuring already and building a ship one of these days to go to one of the planets, especially in our own system. So when I heard about this flying saucer invading our Earth, it wasn't too strange, yet it was quite surprising, or you might say fantastic in some ways, as people say it today. So I proceeded to watch the sky day and night. I have seen many objects flying through space and succeeded in photographing them through my telescope. True, there were no outline of the ship in clean-cut form. Mostly I caught was lights moving through space. Yet, through all the investigation and study and what knowledge I had about astronomy, they didn't line up with anything known in the field of a celestial body. So there must have been something different than known in astronomy. Then, besides, I have heard many times that they were landing every now and then out in the desert. So I have started out to the desert, each time taking my telescope in a portable manner out there with a hope of getting a better picture out there. They were landings. Then I could get through here at the Palomar slope. So after 5 years of this, I got acquainted with some people from Arizona. One of these was Dr. Williamson, and they thought that we'd like to have a little gathering somewhere out in the desert. They had quite a ways to come, so we kind of divided the distance, and I told them that I would meet them at light. This happened to be in the year of 52 on November the 20th. That morning, when we arrived there after leaving here at midnight and arriving there, they've already had their breakfast. So we then had ours, and finally we turned back on the highway that led us to Blythe, California, which is only a short distance from the Colorado River, and we'd driven 40 miles or so till we came to a road turning off marked Parker and Phoenix. We finally turned on this road as I was following my feeling, or we call, I had a premonition, or as some people call it, and we'd driven about 10 miles or a little more. Then I had a feeling to stop there. We stopped. As we stopped, well, by this time we were a little thirsty. We had some soft drinks with us, and we're going to have a little drink. And in the meantime, while we're doing this, a plane of our own on routine flight was going towards Parker. We observed him carefully, and before we knew it, after it was out of sight, there was another one appeared in the sky. This time we noticed that this one seemed and to have no appendages of any kind or a wing like our planes have. But we thought for a moment that perhaps it's the way it was standing out in space, yet the very idea of it standing still, hovering, was strange. Finally, it made a slight change, and we noticed for the first time that it really didn't have any appendages. We then realized for the first time that it was a cigar-shaped type ship, and they have been reported previously, and now they're known as motherships. So immediately I thought this is a good chance to probably get a good picture. Being on the sealed site, couldn't very well put up a telescope there. So we went down a little ways, I don't know just how far that was, into a flat territory. It used to be a target range. And we set up the telescope there. Quite rocky, but there's quite a bit of dirt and sand among the rocks and quite a bit of good smooth land and spots. So as we set this up, I told the folks then, since two of them helped me to set this up, altogether there were seven of us, that included me, to get on the road and watch carefully, be sure that they had their eyes on me, so if anything did happen, they would probably know what happened, because I wasn't too sure of anything. In the meantime, I knew that if I had the group right with the telescope and gathered a group of that kind, cars moving on that highway would probably stop and start gathering, and it would spoil my chances of getting a picture or anything. So, this way I was alone, yet they were well enough stationed to observe me very well. So finally, as I set up the telescope and the camera, first thing I saw a saucer come in, known now as a scout, and he flew around there, and I took some pictures of him, seven plates in all. I have a camera that attaches to the eyepiece of the telescope and uses cut film, which goes into a plate, and you put one in and take a picture, pull that one out, and put another one as fast as you can. It doesn't take too long. So I've exposed all seven of them. Pretty soon, it went over the hill. In the meantime, I look up once in a while, and I saw the mothership quite a ways out there, not in the same spot anymore that we first spotted it. So after this saucer went over the hill, I thought, well, that's it. So I start dismantling, and I dismantle the camera off of the eyepiece the first thing. As I looked around to see if the saucer did return, I saw a man waving to me. So I was wondering what the man was doing out there, and it's quite a ways, I would say about a quarter of a mile, or probably a little less, but not much less. And although I knew that there were people hunting for gyms and so forth, we call them rock hounds, and I thought it might be somebody out there that needs help, and miners through there as well. Otherwise, there was no reason for anybody being out in that wilderness. So I started. I went towards him, quite cautious, and the closer I got, the stranger feeling I had. And pretty soon I saw where the wind was blowing fairly well, his hair was waving over his shoulders. So I realized that he had long hair. But that was nothing new either, since in California, quite a number of people, they call them naturalists and so forth, that wear hair quite long. And they travel through the desert quite a bit from place to place. So that was nothing strange either. But then when I got closer, I realized that he had a sort of a one-piece suit. At least that's the way it appeared. Since then, I have learned better. It's not really one-piece suit at all, while I'm at the idea here, but it's a two-piece suit that looks like a one-piece suit because of the white belt that they wear, where the two garments come together. But at first, that's the way it looked to me. So, I still see nothing but this man. Got up to him, and as suddenly as I did, he pulled out his hand to shake hands. And I did the same. And of course, it was just like, well, I would be shaking someone's hand here. Well, he refused that. Instead, he put it palm to palm. He wouldn't have a grip on it like we customarily do. So I did that, and I got the feeling this man is a spaceman, must have gotten out of the saucer, but when and how? I looked around a little bit and didn't see nothing that would suggest that there was a saucer around there anywhere. So try to talk to him. Well, he didn't seem to understand what I was saying, and yet I felt he was picking up my thoughts all the time. He was getting the pictures of the ideas which I had in mind to ask him. And naturally, I also felt quite safe because that feeling, cautious feeling I had previously just simply left me. Then I noticed that he was kind of working around with his feet, and as he moved his feet away, I noticed there's a strange markings would be left where his foot was. And I didn't say nothing. So finally, the wind was, as I stated, pretty strong, and I guess where the ship was in a sort of a cove where I could not see it, where I was standing with him. And the wind blowing pretty well, and the sun hitting it, saw a reflection. So I looked. As I looked, I noticed that there was something in that cove. So I asked him, "Is that your ship?" And he nodded his head. He seemed to understand. Yes. It was about 75 feet up further from where we were standing to where the ship was sort of hiding, let us say, against the hillside. But in the meantime, I've asked him where he was from. And I finally pointed to the sun. The sun was overhead. Pointed to the sun and made gesture with my hand as an orbit. Orbit number one was Mercury. I named it. Number two was Venus. And Earth was number three. And I pointed to the Earth. Well, finally, after I did that a couple times, he finally repeated it. And he stopped at Venus. And he pointed to the Venus that was where he was from. So I repeated it, and he also repeated it, confirming it that way. Finally, after that, we went over to the ship. And he told me to be careful as I stood by the ship fairly close. And you know how a person is not standing perfectly still. He'll keep on moving his feet one way and the other. And accidentally, I got partially under the ship with my right shoulder. And as it got there, this power was on, sort of a jet-type power. It wasn't a jet exactly. It was a magnetic force. I realized it, but it was pounding towards the Earth back and forth. You couldn't hear it, but as my arm got caught, and that's the only analysis I can make, that it first pulled my arm up against the flange of the ship and then suddenly reversed that polarity and shot it downward. And, of course, at that moment, unbalanced me. And he grabbed for me to keep me from falling underneath it. That would have meant I would have got hurt pretty badly if I had. And in doing so, there was some shrub out there, quite sharp, and as he grabbed for me, he sort of scratched his hand on the shrub, and he bled with blood just like our own. He was a man that looked just the same as us, better looking than we are. really, in some ways, and very intelligent, very kind, and every respect. And that way he prevented me from falling under the ship with my body. This aunt was sort of paralyzed after that for a while, and sort of numb. And even now and then, today, it happens. Just suddenly, without a warning, it flops like a rag, and I have no feeling in it, and suddenly comes back again. It has not been completely cured as it should have been by now, and maybe never will. I don't know. I'm not worried about it at all. But while we were talking, though, the jets of our own Air Force was flying around on a couple of occasions. They came so low, scooping down, I suppose, wondering who was what. They must have saw the saucer in this mothership out there. Must have attracted them. That we thought that a couple times they would take our heads off as they scoop around and turning, you know, with their wings. Well, finally, he got into the ship. I've got to talk to him about 45 minutes. And he got into the ship and took off. Well, it's then when I went back finally, I realized the prints there he left were from his shoes on in the sand among these little rocks here and there. And then Dr. Williamson and all the rest of them come up, and we all went over there and saw these prints. And I thought, sure, I had some good pictures. Well, we had some plaster Paris with us because Dr. Williamson is a anthropologist, and so is his wife. They always take any kind of prints they might find, and so as a result, plaster Paris was along in case that we would find something among the rocks, since we intended to go around the rocks and investigate the territory just from like the rock hounds do it. And you can't ever tell when you run across something. So we used it to take the prints of these plaques. And after we have done that job, the ship was gone, so was the mothership gone, and so was our ships gone. There was nothing around after that. And we marked the place, come back to the highway, loaded up everything, and started to get something to eat, went back to the restaurant there down in Desert Center. And the folks from Arizona was going back to Arizona while we were going, coming back home. I give them one film, as they asked me, and as they got to Arizona, to Phoenix, they went and had this film developed. And the Phoenix girls had developed this film, and they were a little bit disappointed because they said they thought first we'd have a darn good picture and they'd be having a scoop. We are quite excited. In the meantime, these folks told them the story, what happened, and they want to call me to confirm it, but unfortunately, I didn't have a telephone, so they went ahead and published this article anyway. But the picture didn't turn out so well. It was fuzzy, quite fuzzy. It should have been a sharp picture. But what happened, really, I was a little bit too close. Since these ships are magnetically controlled and magnetically operated, the magnetic influence known as a field force was around it quite intense, or it must have been, because just as soon as the negative was developed and the print was made, one of the men down at the Gazette supposed to have made the statement, well, this looks like the film was close to X-ray machine. That's the way it looks. It's quite diffused, yet it showed three ball-type landing gears underneath it and a dome, except it was distorted badly through this magnetic field. So disappointment was terrific. So, then finally, in the meantime, after my arm got caught, I started putting the pocket of a jacket, changing them from one pocket to the other, which I realized later it was already too late, but at the moment I didn't think so. Or one of these blacks, these negatives that was already exposed in the holder. So I give it to him. And before he left, and on December the 13th, he came through the territory here where we lived. I don't know if he knew, except that he probably followed my mind, or even could have followed us on the way home in the ship. That I don't know to this day how he knew, but he did know, and he come through here. And he dropped this particular plate, the holder, and of course I wasn't sure that it was developed or not developed. So after I picked it, it hit a rock and bounced down here, and I picked it up and took it to Detweiler down here at Carlsbad, which is near the coast. He did all the developing and printing of all the pictures that I have taken, and he did. He says, we'll put it in the soup and find out. He says, it won't hurt it if it has been developed. So that's what he did, and it wasn't developed before, but they erased what was on it and put on what is known the plaque now with a lot of writings on it, which has been partially deciphered recently, and also as a picture of what is known to be planet Venus. A man in Africa developed that one to a point that now you can recognize it and so forth. And speaking of the prints in the shoes and this plaque, yes, there have been some deciphering done recently, but not all of it, although we'll give what we have in general, and yet they have told me what the meanings are. So I'm putting that in next publication as well, which will be sometime next spring, I imagine. But up till now, I was hoping that other people could decipher it in full, and I wouldn't have to say nothing. But unfortunately, they have not done so. And so I have to say what they tell me in connection with what the people have deciphered as far as they have gotten. And first thing I knew, the news spread so fast, I was sort of on the spot. And of course, I wasn't going to say too much, but I was put on the spot after that publication. And first thing I knew, I had a call or a letter asking me about my experience from London. Desmond Leslie, I did not know at the time, didn't even know such a man existed. He already had a book written that was in the publisher's hands to be published. Well, he asked about this. I had sent the information, what I had, without even thinking that they might take it and I get nothing out of it. That was my idea at all. I just sent it to them, pictures and all. Because when they came through here on December the 13th, I really did get some good pictures of them then, which were published in the first and second book. They finally decided to take out, the publisher decided to take out some of his works, which was all research of the ages on these flying saucers, and make room for what little I had to say, and they put it together, and that's the way the book happened to be published. But in general, I would say since the first contact, I have learned later that these people do talk any and every language. It doesn't make no difference which one. First, they can tune in on our radios and learn that way. Second, they're so far advanced that they know pretty near the language from reading your thoughts in that way. And on a second contact I had made with the same individual from Venus, he started talking English, and that sort of surprised me. And I asked him, why didn't he talk to me English in the first place? Well, this was his answer. He said, the reason why I didn't talk with you in English in the first place, because I wanted wanted you to know how it feels when I focus my thoughts upon you, which is called, in our language, thought transference. And then that way, anytime I want to meet you someplace or see you again, when you get that kind of an impression, you know it's coming from me and no one else. And that was the reason. I understood everything you asked me, but I wanted you to get the impressions from me. And so that was the reason, because I can speak a little Polish, and of course, after vacation, I spoke Polish to him, and he spoke Polish better than I could, which proved that he could speak any language to me. Since then, I had, of course, other contacts or meetings with them, and I had even been in their ships. I have learned quite a bit in reference to their ships, their propulsion, and their philosophy, which naturally the second book was the result of that, known as the Inside of Spaceships. Because people ask me now, what kind of life do you live, what religion, and so forth. So naturally I had that in my mind, and that's what they answered. And it's all in that book. The only thing I have not published in that book was the mechanical side, or the power plant idea, which I have observed fairly well in there, and a little bit, and so forth. But that will come probably later. I don't think we're quite ready to harness that kind of a power ourselves, because if we do, they are afraid of, in that same way, that we might put guns on it, and there would be no more peace in space. Well, they do have peace in space up till now. And when we decide that we're not going to put guns on, I think we're going to be handed that knowledge where we can build such a ship and finally go to those planets and see for ourselves. So far, it's only my word and the other fellow's word and so forth. But I'm not the only one that made personal contacts. I have records on file here of something like several of such contacts been made since I made mine, and a number of them before I made mine. There was a nice contact down here in Mexico City, too, and I went down and I had talked to this man, also a Venetian ship, and so there have been many contacts throughout the world, so it's really nothing new by one person like myself that had such an experience as others. The only difference is that I happen to publish my experience while so many of them have not. There's only a few that have published their experience besides me. Most of them either didn't have enough to publish or were afraid of the criticism. And you do get the criticism, there's no question about it. But then truth is truth, and if the people want to know what happened, that's the only way you can tell them. And that's what I did. But people ask me even now, would you do it over? Well, if it's going to help humanity anyway at all, yes. But if it is not going to help humanity and going through the conditions that sometimes one must go through, I would be given a second thought to it. Because it's not a pleasant situation at first, and you do lose all your privacy that you one time had. Once you get into the life of the public, you have none. And you want to please everybody, because most people, I find, are very sincere and want to know the truth. And I hate to let them down by not talking to them when they want certain information or clearance of certain ideas they may themselves have. But that is the way the whole thing happened. So I'm just like everybody else. I'm just one among the millions in this world that you say, why did it happen to you? But I say it happened to others too, so it didn't all happen to me. And I did not expect it to happen. As I stated before, I just went out with a hope of catching a good picture where I realized that I probably couldn't get it here. I might get it there. And it all happened just that way. A lot of things happen to us sometimes that we wonder why and how. But that's the way it happens.